Okay, we're starting here on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara is discussing how the order of the Mishnah developed. The Gemara wanted to understand how we picked the arayot that are mentioned in the Mishnah. We have 15 of them, and then there's a certain sequence. How did that sequence come about? So the Gemara assumed that drusha was the driving factor over here, because there was a drusha to get to bito mi'anusato. That was something that was chaviv alav. Since that's chaviv alav, that's what came out to be first. The Gemara says, wait a minute, if you're talking about drushot, what about achot isha? Achot isha is the source for tzara, and that's in the katuv, that's in the pasuk. So that should be the one that comes out last, because that's the one that is explicit, the most obvious in this situation now. So that should be in at the end. And then the Gemara then wants to understand, you didn't put that at the end, because we got involved in achvata. We got involved in terms of brothers and certain relations, and therefore we continued down that path. So what the Gemara concluded on yesterday was, we picked bito mi'anusato because that was the drusha. Once we got started, then we had a logical sequence as to the relationships that the husband has with these offspring women. So then the Gemara now continues and says, litnei la'achot isha lebasof. The Gemara wants to know, put achot isha at the end because there is no drasha. Aydi dari b'isur achvato, tana achot ishto. It says, since we're already dealing with brothers in that situation, or brothers, sisters, that got captured in that grouping. Gemara says, v'litnei l'hai bava libesof. Why don't you put that sequence at the end? You're right that achot isha is part of a larger group of arayot that are connected, but just shift that whole group to the end. You're just saying, okay, here's the reason that we didn't put it at the end, because it belongs to a group. But then put that whole group at the end, and then you won't have a problem. It says, Elatana, korve, korve, nakat. So here's the basic principle, which is that the Tana followed a basic principle, which is the relationship, the closeness of the relationship determines where it is located within the Mishnah. Tana, bito, ubat bino, de korve atzmo. The beginning or the starting point here is not because of the drasha. You could argue that's also a factor here, to bito me'anusato. But the most important factor is that it's bito, bat bino, all in the possessive form. His children. And the focus on his children is because they're not necessarily his wife's children. They're his children because this could be bito me'anusato, according to Tosfot, but it could also be bito me'ishto. You have krovav. That's people that are close to him. Then, since they already dealt with three generations down on his side, which is you have Bito, and then you have Bat Bino and Bat Bito, so those are three generations down on his side, then he went over to his wife's side and did the same sequence of three generations, which is Ishto, Bat Ishto, and Bat Bina, and Bat Bita. So that's a parallel structure. I will remind you again, always with these issues in the Mishnayot, remember, they're learning them by heart. So that the order or the sequencing does make a difference when you're trying to remember something. So if you have bito, bat bino, and bat bito, and then you go over to bita, bat bina, and bat bita, there's a logical sequence here that helps you to remember the movement of the Mishnah. So it says, first of all, we deal with his relatives or the closeness of his relatives, three generations this down, and the same thing with her side. Now, bat ishto, again, according to Rashi, could either be stepchildren, or it could be literally his own children, which is that it happens to be his wife that he's married to, that these are the children through her, but through marriage rather than outside of the marriage context. So then, Tana Shlosha Doro Lamalo Dido. After you already did three generations down of her, then you go three generations up from her side. Now, three generations from his side is not relevant, because on his side he can't have his brother marry one of the three generations up on his side, because then he shares a common father with his brothers in order to have Yibum take place. If he shares a common father with them, then there's no way that his brothers, he can either marry his father's wife, which would be Eshet Aviv, or grandparents, mean that there's a relationship there that will preclude any brother from the father ever being married. So there's no three generations up on his side. The only thing he can have is three generations up on his wife's side, and that's how we got to Chamoto, and then Aim Chamoto, and Aim Chamiv. All right, so therefore now you have three generations up on her side. So again, it's easy progression here. The closest is three of his down, three of hers down, and then three of hers up. So that's an easy memory device. Easy way to move through the Mishnah. You have 9 arayot already that are mentioned by the Mishnah. V'tana achoto v'achot imo dekro ve'yatzmo. So now we've finished that section of 9. Then it moves back to, let's get as close as possible to him. So that's achoto, his sister. And then achot imo, which are krove atzmo, things that are connected to him. V'aydi da'ari b'isur achva. So now we already got introduced into this relationship, but a relationship that deals with brotherhood, sisterhood. So dana achot ishto. So therefore it dealt with his wife's sister. So now achot ishto, which you wanted to put at the end, now we're explaining why it's not at the end. It's caught up in this group of achva. Ubedinu delikadma lekalato mikame eshet achiv. The truth is that in terms of the order of the Mishnah, based on the logic you're using now, then Kalato, which is the last one, his daughter-in-law, should have come prior to Eshet Achiv Shelo Hayah Be'olam, his brother that was not at the same time in the world with him. Because Eshet Achiv Shelo Be'olam has nothing to do with Kirva, has nothing to do with relationship. That is just a problem or technical problem within Yibum. Kalato is a relative, that's a daughter-in-law. So even though technically Kalato should have preceded Eshet Achiv Shelo Be'olam, the lo mishum kurva hu de asira has nothing to do with their relationship that he's asur. But again, because you're already involved in brotherhood, sisterhood, tana eshet achiv shelo hayah be'olam, which is like a derivative of that. Again, with the logical order, it makes sense. V'hadar tana kalato. And therefore, it adds in kalato in the end. It's a throw-in at the end because it doesn't match any of the groupings, but it's a relative that we have to deal with. Now, the Tosafot says the same thing, that Vuadin, that you could have asked the same question of Eshet Achiv Mi'imo, the wife of his brother through his mother. It's half-brother through his mother, their wife. V'chadim inayu nakat, devayu lav krovei atzmo ninu. Both of those are not krovim to him directly. It's his sister-in-law. His sister-in-law is a sister-in-law through marriage. It's not a sister-in-law through blood relationship. So that also should have gone after Kalato, because Kalato is clearly closer than that. His daughter-in-law is also through marriage, but it's closer than his sister-in-law. His daughter-in-law should have been closer. But again, the answer is the same, which is that we dealt with Achva. Since we dealt with Achva, we grouped all of those together. So the sequence in the Mishnah now is, you have Krovei Atzmo, which are the 3 generations down for him. Then once he did his, they go over to his wife's. So then it's Bat Ishto, the 3 generations down on her side. Then the 3 generations up on her side, which then we move over to Achva, anything to do as a relationship with brotherhood, blood relationships through brotherhood, and then that extends into other brothers and sisters, which really basically include sister-in-laws, which is Achot Ishto and Achot Achiv Mi'imo, which are both sister-in-laws, so that's also captured in that grouping. Then, because of a logical extension of Achva, we say Eshet Achiv Shelo Hayah Be'olam, because it has the word Ach in it. And the last thing is Kalato. So that's how we capture the logic of the Mishnah. Again, in a situation when you're memorizing the Mishnah, this would have a lot of benefit. Now to us, it seems okay, it's interesting, but what's the big deal? If you're memorizing Mishnayot, this is a big deal because now you have a certain sequence of logic which would help you to remember the Mishnah and say, okay, I know I have 3, 3, 3, I have 9 for the first ones, and those are based on 3 down, 3 down, 3 up. Then I move over to brothers and sister-in-laws. So I can work through those, and then it gets a Kalato, which is the last one at the end that I need to remember. So that's the logic that's given to the Mishnah. The Gemara at this point is done with working through the logic of the Mishnah, and now wants to understand the next piece of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "My iria the Tana potrot." It says here that an erva is poter tzarata, exempts her tzara. Why are we saying exempt her tzara? Litne osrot. The truth is, she doesn't just exempt her, it is now asur. This is the tension we talked about yesterday between Eshet Ach and Yibum. Where there's no mitzvah of Yibum, it's not just like there's a neutral stance now, where there's no mitzvah of Yibum, you're left in a position where there's an iser karet of Eshet Ach, of marrying one's brother's wife. So in that situation, it's not just turot, oh, you exempted them from it. No, it's asurot. They may not engage in Yibum here because there's an Isur Karet that's involved. So when it says, Itani Osrot, if I said that they restrict it, Havamina Asur Liyabim, Aval Michlatz Chautzo. So that what you would have thought is, if I say it's Asur to perform Yibum, my assumption would have been, no Yibum, yes, chalitza. So the reason it doesn't use the word asur has an implication of you may not do this, but you probably have to do the alternative, which would have been chalitza. Kamash malon, that's not the case. The case is here is that they're turot means they're exempted the gamre, exempt from yibum, exempt from chalitza as well. So when it says, v'litne asura lachlots, why don't you just say then, instead of saying asur liyabim, just say asur lachlots, he cannot perform chalitza. Now, when he says he can't perform chalitza, the assumption is that that means also yibum. That the Isser applies, if it's Asur b'chalitza, he's obviously Asur b'yibum. Now, Gemara says, why would you say Asur l'chlotz, Micah Ovid? What are you doing? When you're performing yibum, you have, again, the tension between Eshed Ach and the mitzvah of yibum. To say that it's Asur makes sense in that situation, because if you're performing yibum in the wrong place or at the wrong time, then you're involved with Eshed Ach. To say Asur b'yibum makes sense. To say Asur b'chalitza, what are you doing in the performance of b'chalitza that is illegal? To perform chalitza, in a sense, is a neutral event if it's not proper chalitza. We'll see later on in the Gemara that's not so true, because once you enter into the world of chalitza, then there are other ramifications in terms of Yisurim d'Rabbanan from your relatives and so on and so forth. But in an abstract view, chalitza is a neutral act. So she takes off his shoe, she spits in front of him. All that has no meaning if the ceremony is not a religious ceremony. So if they perform chalitza, even in the place where they don't have to perform chalitza, nothing bad has happened. So to say that it's osur to perform chalitza, why would you ever say such a term as osur lachlotz? So that's what the Gemara says. You can't say that. The Gemara says, alam alo. Why can't you say it? Iata omer choletzet mityabemet. If you say that someone who does chalitza can also do yibum, so therefore, the derivative of saying asur lachlotz is also asur liyabim. So that's the reason that you use asur. The derivative of asur lachlotz is also asur liyabim. And you also gain the fact that if you said asur liyabim, you wouldn't know that automatically asur lachlotz. But the other way around, you would know asur lachlotz, you would know asur liyabim. So maybe that should be the reason, or that should be the language that the Mishnah used. Again, the Mishnah uses the words patur. Why use patur? Mara first suggests use patur because asur would be the wrong language to use here, because if I said asur liyabim, I would think mutar bechalitza, or I have to perform chalitza. Mara says, hey, asur lachlotz. Mara says, asur lachlotz is not a right term. Chalitza is not something, it's asur mutar. It's either required or not required. So patur would be the right language over there. Mara says, no, maybe it is the right language because chalitza and yibum have a connection between them. Therefore, if I said asur lachlotz, I also mean asur liyabim.
Because an outside party could be misled by the performance of chalitza over here. They might think the reason you performed chalitza is because he wasn't interested in performing yibum. But had he been interested in performing yibum, he would have performed yibum. And that would lead to a big problem, which is that people on the outside would think that by tzarat erva, the co-wife of an erva, you can perform yibum. This person just decided to opt out. Therefore, asur b'chalitza is the right language because it's telling you don't do chalitza so you don't mislead anybody else into thinking that there is an option of yibum in this instance.
So that would be the language we should have used. Now the Gemara is in a position where, why didn't the Mishnah say that? Here's the Gemara's answer. Kevin demakum mitzvah huda sira tzara, shelo b'makum mitzvah sharia. Only in the place of a mitzvah does this tzara cause an issue. Shelo b'makum mitzvah. When there is no mitzvah, sharia. Everything is mutar. So here's the explanation of why we say patur over here. Because the implications of asur would have much broader implications. The scenario that we're in right now is that you have an erva and a co-wife. The erva and a co-wife, what is the relationship between the erva and the co-wife? So if I had written the word asur, I would have thought in any scenario where there's an erva and a co-wife, then this individual is asur not only to the erva, but also to the co-wife. Even outside the context of yibum. Yibum is just this one of the scenarios. But, for instance, a person has a relative that is married to a man. Nothing to do with him. Not a brother through the father. Some independent person that's out there. They have a relative that's married to them, but they also have a co-wife. That individual passes away, and now his wives are available for remarriage. Would you suggest in that case that those wives that are available for remarriage, he may not marry this individual? Why? Because he has an erva there. One of the co-wives is an erva. Her co-wife, is she now precluded from
marrying this other individual. They have no relationship whatsoever. That would be the tzara of an erva. How far does this din of tzara to an erva go? Is it only in the context of Yibum? Or even outside the context of Yibum? It would be true as well. So you have Reuven and you have Kalev. No relationship to each other. Kalev happens to marry to Reuven's daughter. In addition to being married to Reuven's daughter, he also has another wife. Then Kalev passes away. And Reuven's daughter, obviously Reuven can't marry. But what about the co-wife, the other wife? Can he marry her? The answer is yes. So that's the question that the Gemara is dealing with over here. Can he marry that co-wife? Well, it depends how you phrase this inside of Yibum. If you phrase it inside of Yibum as being asur, then it would imply that the whole problem is a co-wife to an erva. Co-wife to an erva is asur. Whether it's in the context of Yibum, where there's a mitzvah, kal v'chomer, where there is no mitzvah, it should be asur. If you say patur, that relationship or that language speaks specifically to the issue of Yibum, not outside the context of Yibum. And by saying patur, it's saying that no Yibum over here, but no broader implications about co-wives to arayot. So I'll read it again in the Gemara. The Gemara answers this way, which is, Kaven de makom mitzvah hu de asira tzara. Only in the view or face of a mitzvah is this issue of co-wife to a erva an issue. Meaning, only in the context of Yibum does it matter. Only in the context of Rashi. If you look in Rashi, the header to Rashi here is Kaven de makom mitzvah Yibum hu de asira. He adds in the word Yibum there. Not just the word mitzvah, mitzvah Yibum. In the face of mitzvah Yibum, there is a relevance to the fact that a co-wife is a co-wife to an erva, to the individual performing Yibum. In that context, there is patur. She is exempted from performing Yibum. But, shelo b'makom mitzvah, when there is no Yibum, there's no relationship between the two parties, the two husbands over here, then sharia, there it's mutar. Therefore, mishum hachi tani potrot. Patur deals specifically with an obligation to marry. So you would use patur in the context of obligation, which is Yibum. If you use the word asur would have broader implications. Asur would mean even outside the context of an obligation, even the place where it's optional, it would remain asur. So the Mishnah used the word patur to specifically guide us that this issue is only applicable in the face of an obligation of Yibum, that's where you're patur. Outside of that, where there's no obligation, where it's can I marry, can I not marry, there it's mutar. And that's why it used the Lashon of patur versus asur. Answered one question in the Mishnah. Now the Gemara moves on to the next line in the Mishnah. Ma'iria detani mina chalitza o mina yibum. Why does the Mishnah write chalitza and then yibum? I spoke about this yesterday in the introduction when we were speaking about the Mishnah. But here, the Gemara says, litnei mina yibum lechudei. Just say, from libum. So, itana mina yibum, have amina michlat schalza yibum elo yibayabma. So that's easy. The reason that it mentions both of them is if I'd only said that no Yibum over here, I would have thought no Yibum, but yes, Chalitza. Meaning that the reason you can't perform Yibum is a problem of Arayot. But that may not automatically exempt you from Chalitza. It might say, okay, don't perform Yibum, do something to release the woman. You have to release this woman, so go ahead and release her. Do Chalitza. So Kamash Malan, neither of them. So now, what's the Kamash Malan? Kol ole the Yibum, ole the Chalitza. This is a very important principle. It shows up 5 times in the Gemara Yivamot. In 2 of them, the first 2 that we're going to bump into are here in Daf Chav, deal with Arayot. Comes up in other contexts later on in the Masechta. There's an important principle, which is anyone who is Re'uya Li'yibum or has an issue of Yibum, then there's an issue of Chalitza. If there is no Yibum, there is no Chalitza to speak of. So now we have kol ole leyibum ole lechalitza v'choshen ole leyibum en ole lechalitza, which is that the two are now inextricably connected, which means that if there's no yibum, chalitza falls away. How do I know that? The Mishnah gave you both. It says mina yibum mina chalitza to teach you that both items fall away at the same time because of this connection between them. Now, Rav Rosenzweig, when he phrased this, he said you can phrase this in 1 of 2 ways. You could say that the reason that kol ole leyibum ole lechalitza is just a siman. It's not that Yibum and Chalitza are 2 sides of the same coin, but rather it's, you have a zika here. Right? So the question is, does the zika exist? Or does the zika not exist? If the zika exists, I have to address it. Zika is the connection between the brother and the wife of the deceased brother. the potential Yibum, the Zika, or the connection between the brother who's going to perform Yibum and the wives that are left from the deceased brothers, that connection is what drives either Yibum or Chalitza. So what we're saying here is not that Yibum or Chalitza are connected, we're just saying that Zika is what matters. If there's a connection between them, then you have to do one of two things, perform Yibum or perform Chalitza. If there's no Zika, then they both fall away because there's no necessity to address the situation. And if you look at Rashi, that's exactly how Rashi phrases it over here. The whole patra bat mizikat yibum turah min achalitza. He doesn't say because she's turah from the yibum, therefore she's turah from the chalitza. He says because she's turah mizikat yibum, then chalitza falls away. The chol ole le zikat yibum, anybody who has a zika of yibum, ole le zikat chalitza. So Rashi adds in the word zika here to tell you, and it seems to be Rashi is leaning heavily in that direction, which is that the yibum and chalitza are not two mitzvot, two sides of the same coin, but rather they're just a result of the zika. If a zika exists,
and yibum is evidence of the fact that the zika exists. So once the zika exists, then there's a relevance to chalitza.
Then I have options. I got to deal with it, either yibum or chalitza. If there's no zika, they both fall away automatically. And that's the way that Rashi views this situation here. And therefore, Rashi makes a statement here that we're going to come up to scenarios throughout this Gemara here where you do chalitza and there's no yibum, mishum sfeikahu. Rashi says, by definition, that is a safek. Because you can't have a scenario. According to Rashi, it's impossible to have a scenario in which chalitza would exist and yibum would not exist. Because by definition, they're both driven by the same factor, which is zika. If there is Zika, then there's Yibum and Chalitza. No Zika, neither exists. That means that if the Gemara is telling you to do Chalitza and not Yibum, it's only Mishum Sveika. We're worried about something and therefore we do it. It can't be that there's really a concept called Chalitza without Yibum, independent of Yibum. So that's the way Rashi phrases over here. The Rabbi Kiva Eger, you can see here right away, points you to the Gemara on Daf Chaf Aleph, which is the Gemara we discussed yesterday in the Mishnah, the case of the Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol who ends up in a situation of Yibum where is out of Nisuin, a woman who has married been Nisuin to his brother, and now she's a Be'ula, she's no longer a Betula, and there the Gemara says, Chalitza and no Yibum. So over there it doesn't sound like it's a problem of Safek, it's a problem because there is an Isur involved with the Kohen, but the Isur is not strong enough to eliminate the Zika that's there. Since it's not strong enough to eliminate the Zika, then you have to do Chalitza and not Yibum. How is Rashi going to deal with that? That's not a case of safek. But that might exactly be what Rashi is hinting to. You could, if you were, I'd say ambitious, you could suggest in Rashi, that's what Rashi is trying to say. Over here, he's defining for you that chalitza can only exist without Yibum when there's a safek. The scenario in Daf Chaf Aleph is not a scenario of safek, but it's a case actually where the Zika does exist. And technically, you could perform Yibum. Yibum could be performed over there. The Gemara actually entertains that possibility that you could do Yibum over there because it's an asei doche lo tasei. The Rava says, oh, you can't do it because it only works on the first bia. It doesn't work afterwards. But basically, the Zika exists. Since Zika exists, you really could perform Yibum and you perform Chalitza. We favor Chalitza because Yibum is not such a simple thing in that scenario. There are other factors or mitigating factors that stop us from doing Yibum. But technically, they could do Yibum, it's just eliminated by, or we push against it, and that would be in concert with what Rashi is saying over here. So that's one way to view this position over here, that kol ole de Yibum, ole le chalitza, which is that it's really talking about Zika, and Zika is what's driving, and if you have a Zika, yes, chalitza, yes, Yibum, no Zika, no chalitza, no Yibum, and that's the only thing that matters over here. The other possibility is, kol ole de Yibum, ole le chalitza, which is that Yibum generates a necessity for Chalitza. Chalitza is the way to release one from the Yibum. So that you have Yibum, and you have what I call the antidote to Yibum. Which is that, yes, there's a possibility of Yibum, but Yibum comes with the package. You can either perform Yibum or you can perform Chalitza. It's nothing to do with the Zika. It has to do with the fact that Chalitza is a way to get out of the problem of Yibum. In that scenario, you could have Chalitza exist independently, possibly, of Yibum, because the two are not connected to the Zika necessarily, but Chalitza is a vehicle, and Yibum is a vehicle. And each one of them are a vehicle to deal with the situation. Yibum is one way to deal with the situation, Chalitza is
the other way to deal with the situation. So why only someone who has Yibum has Chalitza? Because only someone who has Yibum has a necessity for Chalitza. But okay, in a case where Eino Mityabemet, where you're not going to have Yibum, so there we say, well, why would you have to do Chalitza? You could argue over there the reason for the Chalitza is because that's exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to unwind the Yibum in those cases where it's Choletzev Eino Mityabemet, that's exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to use the other vehicle, which is the Chalitza, to be the antidote to the Yibum in those scenarios where Yibum cannot be performed. So in that scenario, you could have Chalitza exist independently of Yibum, or maybe it would be easier to explain it in those scenarios. But again, in all these cases, you have to ask whether Yibum and Chalitza are two different mitzvot, or maybe, again, they're one mitzvah. Is it one mitzvah? Right, it's mitzvah is to deal with Zika. How do I deal with Zika? Yibum or Chalitza. Maybe in that case, it's easier to say it's one mitzvah. Or is Yibum and Chalitza two separate mitzvot? It happens to be that there's a relationship between the two mitzvot, because Kol Ole Yibum Ole Chalitza. Chalitza is only necessary when Yibum is in effect, but that doesn't mean that they are a singular mitzvah. It means that each one independently is a way to deal with a situation. Again, you could argue it in the reverse as well. Just telling you that out of this puzzle, you have to ask these questions. And again, the Makom Rishonim argue about whether Yibum and Chalitza are two separate mitzvot, one mitzvah, or again, what drives here this precedent of Kol Ole Yibum Ole Chalitza. Rashi clearly connects it to Zika. It's all about Zika. Yibum and Chalitza are not relevant over here. Yes, Zika, no Zika. Once there's a Zika, then there's two ways to deal with it. But without a Zika, both of them drop away. The other way to deal with it is Kol Ole Yibum Ole Chalitza. As soon as Yibum comes into the picture, there is a necessity for Chalitza. And since there is a necessity for Chalitza, that's why the two are connected. Nothing to do with Zika. It simply has to do with there's a woman that needs to be dealt with over here. I can either use Yibum or I can use Chalitza. If there's no Yibum, then Chalitza is not relevant anymore because there's nothing to deal with. But if there's a case where I have to deal with this woman, even though I cannot perform Yibum with her, maybe I still have to perform Chalitza in order to release her from the situation, since I cannot perform Yibum in this case. According to Rashi, that scenario can't exist. Because if there's no Yibum, it's because there's no Zika. If there's no Zika, then there's no Chalitza. So there are two ways to view this statement of the Gemara. Bilitnei mina Yibum and mina Chalitza. So Gemara asks, okay, now you've explained to me why I need both of them there. I need both Chalitza and Yibum there to tell me that there's this connection between them. But then you put Chalitza before Yibum. Why don't you put Yibum before Chalitza in the Mishnah? Wouldn't you assume that the best scenario is doing Yibum? Chalitza is the secondary scenario. Inami mina Chalitza l'chuda. Or just say Chalitza by itself. Again, the Gemara assumes if you said Chalitza, Yibum would follow automatically. So just write Chalitza. So Abashol hi damar. This is Abashol I mentioned in the introduction yesterday as well. Mitzvah Chalitza kodemet mitzvah Yibum. Today, that we favor Chalitza over Yibum. This will come up again later in the Masechta, where we'll bump into Abishol. Abishol explains that he thinks that we're currently erva now. That Eshedach, if you don't do it for the right reasons, then the ends don't justify the means. If you marry Eshedach to perform the mitzvah of Yibum, then it's okay. But if you marry Eshedach not to perform the mitzvah of Yibum, even though the mitzvah is to marry Eshedach, that does not help you out. That leaves you in a terrible scenario of maybe pogea be'erva. And that's what Abishol suggests. And therefore he says today, where we don't do it l'shem shamayim, oh, it's because the woman's pretty, it's because he likes this woman, so on and so forth. That already has a problem close to being pogea be'erva. And he says the child might be close to being a mamzer. That's how Abishol terms it. And therefore we favor chalitza over yibum. And that's why the Mishnah put mina chalitza u'mina yibum in that order. Minyona d'reisha l'mutei mai. So here, this is a classic Bavli type of question, which is, if you read the Mishnah, again, in the abstract, you would say, the Mishnah says, Chamesh Esrei Nashim, there are 15 women, and then it goes ahead and enumerates for you the 15 women. Okay, so it gives you 15 women so that you know what your count is going to be going along. It gives you the general principle, and it lays out the details to you. In the Mishnah, you wouldn't have thought anything of it. The Bavli always, in these scenarios, asks, well, if you said 15, that means that you're trying to tell me some information with the number 15. It's not just to give you a header into the Mishnah and say, oh, 15, and now here are the 15 women. It's to tell you 15 and not 16. 15 and not 17. Well, that means that there must be another option that you're excluding from the Mishnah. Again, the Bavli will do this anytime it says Zaklau. Anytime the Mishnah lays out a general piece of information in the Bavli will automatically say why. Instead of just saying that it's the logical flow of the Mishnah, it'll say, okay, what does it mean? And that's what the Gemara asks here. It says, Minyona de Reisha limutei mai, u Minyona de Sefer limutei mai. In the beginning of the Mishnah, it says, Chamesh Esrei, Nashim Potrot Tzarotehem, Tzarot Tzarotehem, Min HaChalitza, Min HaYibom.
That's the count in the beginning of the Mishnah. And then it repeats it again at the end of the Mishnah and says, Elu potrot tzarotayim, tzarot tzarotayim, and achalitza. These arayot have this din, and Elu, and not others. So again, there's two miutim that the Gemara sees in the Mishnah, and it wants to know, what are we coming to eliminate? So Gemara says, the miute derav, deravasi. Coming to exclude the cases of Rav and Ravasi, which we'll bump into later on in the Masechta on Daf Yud Aleph. We'll explain there more in detail the positions of Rav and Ravasi. But just in general, Rav says, Tzarat Sota is Asura. Rav adds in this issue of Sota. If one of the co-wives was a Sota, then the Sota, clearly you don't perform Yibum with the Sota, but what happens to her co-wife in that scenario? Rav says that Tzarat Sota is also Pturah, just like the Sota is Pturah from Yibum. The Sota obviously is precluded from Yibum because once she's declared as a Sota, she's no longer muteret to be with her husband anymore because she had an extramarital affair. She had an extramarital affair. She's asur to her baal. So the kum shem achiv to a Sota makes no sense. Everybody's going to agree with that. Question is the co-wife, the other wife, who is totally innocent in this scenario, what's her status? So Rav says she's a Tzarat Sota. Tzarat Sota is the equivalent of Tzarat Erva, and she's Pturah min Ayibum. She's eliminated. So that's the first thing we're excluding from our Mishnah, is Tzarat Sota, that our Mishnah disagrees with that. The second one is Ravasi, who says Tzarat Ailonit Asura. Again, we'll get to this in the Gemara over there, explain the position of Ravasi. Ravasi says if one of the wives is an Ailonit, it's a woman who cannot give birth, who's eliminated because of Kiddushei Taut. Either there's a problem in the Kiddushim, or she cannot be Lakim Shem Achiv. She cannot establish her brother's name because she's not going to give birth. So she's out of the picture. What happens to her co-wife? So the Ravasi says her co-wife is also Pturah. Since she's Pturah, then the co-wife goes with her and is eliminated from the scenario. What happens if he knows and marries her? So Tosafot had different opinions about exactly what happens in that scenario. We'll get to that when we hit Ravasi. We'll discuss it more in detail. All right, so now we have Tzarat Ailonit, which according to Ravasi also is Pturah. So here you have two cases of Tzarah that are not mentioned in our Mishnah. And that's what the Gemara says. Our Mishnah came to exclude. It says 15, and not 16 and 17. 16 would be Tzarat Sota, 17 would be Tzarat Ailonit. And our Mishnah said these numbers of 15 and Elul to come to exclude these two scenarios over here. So now, Gemara says, according to Rav and Ravasi, Limutemai. Now Rav and Ravasi are Amoraim. So they have to deal with our Mishnah as well. Our Mishnah still has a count according to them. So for everybody else in the world, it's great. You have a 15 count to eliminate Rav and Ravasi. But for Rav and Ravasi themselves, what is the Mishnah coming to eliminate through the count? It's obviously not eliminating their own opinion because they think their opinion is right. So Isviralo de Hadodi, if they hold like each other, meaning that Rav and Ravasi agree to each other's opinions, then they can exclude nothing from the Mishnah of Rav and Ravasi. Therefore, Chadon Mude Tzarat Mamenet, V'chadon Mimute Tzarat Magzir Rushato. So here comes to exclude case of Tzarat Mamenet. This is a woman who is a Ktana, but an Erva. She's married to the brother, the deceased brother, but she's a Ktana. So her marriage is not a marriage Midoraita. It's a marriage Midorabanan. How does she eliminate that marriage? She does Miyun. So that Tzarat of the Mamenet, what's her status? That co-wife of this young girl who performs miyun. So the young girl's out of the picture. I mean, technically you can marry her either way. Mimonov shach, it doesn't matter if he marries the ktana. Because either, if you think she's the wife of the brother, then he's performing yibum. If she's not the wife of the brother, then she's an independent woman. And it doesn't matter. So you can marry the ktana no matter what. The question is the co-wife. What's the status of the co-wife? Later on in the Gemara, we're going to have the answer. Our Mishnah mentions, choletzet ve'enu mitya bemet. She does chalitza, not yibum. Technically, she could perform yibum because the marriage to this young girl is meaningless in the context of yibum. In a Torah, we don't recognize. It's all rabbinic. But because we don't want to look like, in a case of erva, you can have a co-wife do yibum. So in this case, where she's married, it looks like a marriage. To people on the outside, even though it's only a marriage to Rabbanan, it looks like a marriage. You're going to come and make a mistake and say that even in the face of an erva, the co-wife can perform yibum. So in that scenario, we say, do chalitza, don't do yibum. So that's the case. Tzarat Mamemet is a case where the co-wife is not automatically exempted from the mitzvah of Yibum. V'chadon Mutei Tzarat Magzir Grushato. What happens if a brother was married to a woman, then he divorced her, she went off and married another man, then that man either died or was divorced from him, and then he returns her, that brother marries her again. Magzir Grushato, which is a quote-unquote illegal marriage,
in that case, since it's an illegal marriage, that woman clearly is not the Yakum Shem Achiv. That's not the one that we want to have the Yibum perform with. What happens to her co-wives? What happens to her co-wives in those situations? The co-wives in those situations, are they automatically Pturah? Again, we say no. Because Magzir Gushvato is not a level of Erva where we would say that everybody is eliminated. It's simply that she's precluded from the scenario. The other co-wives have reason to marry this person or carry on with the Yibum. Later on in the Gemara, we're going to have the answer. Koletzit Veinu Mitya Bemet. Right now, the Gemara says, Ve'ilo Sfirlo the Hadadi. If Rav and Ravasi don't agree with each other, then Chademute de Chavre. Then one, each one will say, Rav will say, well, one of the exclusions of the mission is Ravasi. And Vachadalimute Otsarat Mameno, Otsarat Magzir Gushvato. And then you use one of the two that we just mentioned over here, they will be eliminated. And for Ravasi, it'll be just the opposite. He'll eliminate Rav as one of his, and then one of the other two will be the elimination from the Mishnah. Now, Udarav, Udaravasi, Litnihu, why don't they put him in the Mishnah? According to Rav and Ravasi, who think that these are Tzarot, Tzarot Sota, and Tzarat Ailonit are real Tzarot that get eliminated, the co-wives are eliminated, why aren't they mentioned explicitly in the Mishnah? Why didn't the Mishnah enumerate them? It says, the fish ain't a bit sarat sarah. Because this only has a impact for one connection, not for multiple connections. Why is there no case of sarat sarah for the scenario over here? It's because all the brothers are equally restricted in marrying this woman. In the case of erva, erva has to do with kirva, with closeness, with relationship. So therefore, in a scenario where the co-wife is turah because of a erva, that might be only with one brother. One brother has an arayot here. Say it's his daughter that's married to his brother. Then the other brothers are not restricted by that erva because they're not their daughters. So that's why you can have a tzarat tzarah. It's because one of the other brothers can marry. In the case of sota, in the case of makzir grushato, it has nothing to do with kirva. It has nothing to do with relationship. These are objective problems for all the brothers. It's an isur that would apply to all the brothers equally. That means that no brother can come in here and step in and perform evil. Since we're all equally asur, there's no scenario of tzarat tzarata because nobody can marry. All of them are restricted in Eshedach, and it's over. It's over at the first level. There's going to be no rematch over here because you can't have one of the brothers marry the co-wife, and then you'll have the scenario where it falls to the same brother again. That won't happen because all the brothers are restricted. In the case of Arayot, one of the brothers might be restricted because of relationships to him, but the other brothers might be able to perform Yibum because there's no relationship over there. So that's the difference between Ravasi and Rav versus the cases of Kirva. Now Tosfot asks the question, wait, I do have a scenario. Im Tomar, Demishkacha Latzarat Sarata, Leinyan Boel, Shiniseit Achiv, Velo Isha Acheret. I have a case of Tzarat Sarata, which is that this woman goes off and marries, this Sota goes off and marries the brother of the extramarital affair. The one, the man that she had an extramarital affair with, she cannot marry. He's a Boel. Just like the Baal is asur to the wife after there's an extramarital affair, so is the Boel. The one who caused the problem is eliminated also. He may not marry this woman. So this woman goes off and marries his brother. The brother of the one she had conducted the extramarital affair with. Now, all of a sudden, that brother dies without children. That brother doesn't have children. Now she falls to all of their brothers to Yibum. To the brother who is the Boel, who had the illicit relationship with her, she may not marry. The other brothers, she's muteret to the other brothers, she had no relationship with them. So there is a case where you can create sarat, sarata, you can create a matul scenario. It's a derivative of sarat, sarata that could fit in the Mishnah, and you would have a case of sarat, sarata. According to Rav, that should have been mentioned in our Mishnah, according to this. So Tosfot says, his answers are very difficult. He says, V'yish lomar, came into the Gabi Baal, lo mishkaka tzarat sarata, inu lachmir bituma, the Gabi Boel, you'll tell me tuma the Gabi Baal. Since you can't have a scenario of tzarat sarata by the Baal, so we're not going to make the Boel more chamur than the Baal. What does one have to do with the other? The Baal is restricted here because his wife went and had an extramarital affair. The Boel is restricted because he did something to wreck someone's marriage. So the reason that he should be asur may be totally independent of why the Baal is asur. Why should you connect the two together? That's the first answer of Tosfot. Vo'yomari, the dafka bituma, dechtiv babi Baal, havi ke'arayot, divlishon lav. So he says that maybe only by the Baal is there a problem of arayot, or does Rav say that the tzarat sota is pturah? But by the Boel, maybe he wouldn't say it, that tzarat sota is pturah, because they're phrased differently. By the Baal, it said that it's a problem of tumah, it's phrased as a lav. By the Boel, it's a derivative out of the pasuk, and therefore it's not explicit, and maybe there's no tzarat sota by the Boel. So Tosfot gives different answers, both of which are not simple, because he makes assumptions about the Isser of the Boel, and the relationship with the Boel to the Baal. And again,
It's interesting. His answers are very difficult, but he's trying to get out of a problem of why is it that Rav didn't mention Tzarat Sotah in the Mishnah, because there is this scenario of Tzarat Sarata that's possible in the Mishnah. Right now, the Gemara says, Minahanei Mile. How do we know what's mentioned in our Mishnah? The basic point that co-wives are exempted when there's an arayot involved in the Yibum. So it says, the Tana Banan, we read this together yesterday, Isha elachuta lo tikach, litzror legalot tervata aleha bechaya. So this is two sisters. A man may not marry two sisters as long as one of the sisters is alive. This is one of the arayot that actually terminates at death, which is that if the woman that he's married to dies, or even after he's divorced her, she dies, then he is permitted to marry her sister. That's bechaya. While she's alive, there's a restriction. As soon as she dies, the restriction is eliminated. The one wants to know the word aleha. Why is that word there? It seems to be extraneous. Aleha matam olamar. So Gemara says lefish ne'amar yivama yavo aleha. So Gemara here sees a gzeres shav of sorts between aleha aleha. Shomei ani afilu ba'achat mikol arayot amurot b'Torah akatuv midaber. So I would have thought that any of the arayot you would still perform yibum. Ne'amar kan aleha v'ne'amar lahalan aleha. Therefore, we have this gzeres shav aleha aleha to teach you. Malahalan b'makom mitzvah. Afkan b'makom mitzvah. Just like over there, we're talking about a mitzvah, so too, we're talking about a mitzvah. V'amar rachmana, lo tikach. The Torah still says, lo tikach. So what you see here is that Yivama Yubo Aleha says that I have a mitzvah to perform Yibum. The Isha Lachuta lo tikach l'tzor galot hervata aleha b'chaya says there's an Isur Arayot. Now, I would have thought, when is there an Isur of Arayot? When there's no mitzvah, there's no overarching mitzvah there. But maybe in the face of the mitzvah of Yibum, it would override the Isser of Arayot. I mean, in the first place, the mitzvah of Yibum overrides Arayot of Eshrach. So maybe it should eliminate all Arayot also. Well, if it can override Eshrach, why can't it override all the Arayot that are found in the parsha of the Arayot? What's the answer? The answer is, it says Aleha Aleha. Aleha Aleha comes to teach you that Yavamo Yavo Aleha, even in the Makom mitzvah, Eshat Alachuta still exists. How do I know that? Because it says Aleha. Even when there's a mitzvah to perform Yibum, there's still an Isser of Lo Tikach. You may not marry the sister, your wife's sister. So that comes along to teach us that even in the face of Yibum, Arayot still stand. So even though we eliminated Eshadach, that's the only one of the Arayot we eliminate, the other Arayot stand. Now, truthfully, all we've proven so far is that if it's the wife's sister, you can't perform Yibum. We don't know anything about all the other Arayot. Vainly Elahi, Tzaratamina'im, we don't her. How about we know that her Tzara is also included, her co-wife is also included? Tamalomar Litzror. Vainly Elah Tzarata. Tzarat Tzaratamina'im. Tamalomar Litzror. It says Litzror, velo Latzur. It says Litzror, which is like multiple. See, because it has two races in it. Whatever the reason is here. Therefore, it says Tzarat Tzarata, not just her. Vainly Elah Acholtisha. I only have the arayot of Akotisha. Shara arayot minayin. How do I know that all arayot are precluded from performing Yibum? Amart, ma akotisha miyuchedet, she erva. An akotisha, the wife's sister, is an erva. V'chayvenos donah karet. If you intentionally do this, you're chayav karet. Al shigigadah, if it's done by accident, chatat. A yisur liyabam. And she's a surah to the individual performing Yibum. Av koshi erva, anyone who's an erva. So you have a binyanav, basically, which it says, what are the unique features of Achotisha? Well, arayot, karet, chatat, all of these are unique features, and all those features are shared with all the other arayot. So since all the arayot are similar position, therefore, all of them are included in this restriction that when there's arayot, no yibum. That's only them. How do I know that also the co-wives are exempted in a situation where there's an erva there? How do I know not only is the erva ptura from Yibum, but also all the co-wives are ptura? Amart, ma'achol tisham yuchedet she erva v'chayim nazdona karet v'ashikachatat, the same thing. V'asura li'abam v'tzarat asura, not only is she restricted, but all the co-wives are restricted to the Yibum. Avko she erva, anything that's an erva, v'chayim nazdona karet, and if it's done intentionally, there's a chiyub karet, v'ashikachatat, v'asura li'abam v'tzarat asura. So again, a binyanav. Binyanav just says that Achotisha is not special in any way. Achotisha is just one of the arayot. And since it's one of the arayot, and it looks, all the other arayot look like it, there's a binyanav. Whatever's true by Achotisha is going to be true by all the other arayot. What's true by Achotisha? Even in the face of the mitzvah of Yibum, the erva stands. And you can't perform Yibum. What's that mean? That means not only can you not marry that woman, none of her co-wives can you marry because of the word litzror.
So just like by Achot Isha, she is eliminated from Yibum, and all her co-wives are eliminated from Yibum, so too by all the other Arayot, that is true as well. Mikan Amru Chachamim. From here we learn out that Chamesh Yisrei Nashim Potrot Tzarotayim Vitzarot Tzarotayim Min Achalitza Min Yibum Ad Sof HaOlam. That's the source for our Mishnah. So it's for our Mishnah, these are the 15 Arayot. It's not just unique to Achot Isha. It applies to all these 15 Arayot. Number one is, they are asurim, even in the face of Yibum. Number two is, they are poter tzarotehem. They exempt their co-wives from Yibum as well, not just themselves, but also their co-wives. And ad sof olam, not just them, but that co-wife goes ahead and marries another brother, she will exempt herself as well as other co-wives, so on and so forth, like we saw the scenarios yesterday that we went through, where there are multiple levels of co-wives that get exempted. So that all comes out of this pasuk. You can see there's a little aleph in the Gemara by the Ein Li Ela Tzarata. Tzarat Tzarata Minayim. That only applies to a tzara. How do I know that multiple tzarot, meaning that you have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, and Shimon's daughter is married to Reuven? So as far as Yibum is concerned, Shimon cannot perform Yibum with Reuven's wives because his daughter is married to Reuven. That's an erva. Her co-wives are all exempted, but Levi has no relationship here. So Levi performs Yibum with one of those co-wives, and now Levi dies without children. Now Shimon's faced with a co-wife from the previous marriage. How do I know that's also problematic? Because of, the Gemara here says, because of the word litzror, which is written in like a plural form of some sort, and therefore it has multiple levels of co-wives are exempted. So even the co-wife that married Levi from Reuven, plus the co-wives of Levi, are all exempted from having Yibum with Shimon. How do we know that? From the Pasuk. The Gra takes this out of the Girsa. The Gra says this is not proper, this is not a part of the Girsa. Gra says, take a look later on in the Gemara, where the Gemara brings a machloket amoraim as to the source of tzarat tzarata. Whether it comes out of the Pasuk Litzror, or Ravashi, who says that it's simply a logical argument. There, the Gemara is speaking about Eshet Achiv Shelo Yehiyah Be'olam. So some of the Rishonim believe that it's unique to that aspect of Eshet Achiv Shelo Yehiyah Be'olam, and you still need the Pasuk for the other Arayot. Whereas, as the Rabbi Kiva Iriker quotes here from the Rabbeinu Tam and the Sefer Yashar and the Ramban, both say that's not the case. Why do they say that you don't need this Girsa in the Gemara? They say it's logical. We mentioned this in the Sheet of the Rambam yesterday, which is their very simple logic here. Once you have Reuven and Shimon, Reuven is married to Shimon's daughter, married to his niece, and he's married, has other co-wives. So now Reuven passes away without children. Shimon's faced performing Yibum with his daughter. He certainly can't do. That's Erva. The co-wives are exempted because they are Tzarot. Once the co-wives are exempted, they become an Arayot of Eshirach. If they're Arayot of Eshirach, they now become Arayot. And if they're Arayot, and now they go marry the Levi, who's another brother, that doesn't change their status. They're now Arayot. Since they're Arayot, when Levi dies without children, that Erva of Eshirach still exists, and their co-wives will be exempted because that's Arayot. And Arayot exempt not only themselves, but also their co-wives. So Ramban and Sefer Yosher and others say that the extension of Tzarat to multiple brothers, on and on and on, co-wives to co-wives to co-wives, is a logical extension. You don't need a pasuk to teach you that, because once you can't marry the woman, she is an erva. Because Eshedach is an erva, where the tension between Yibum and Eshedach always exists. If you can't perform Yibum, that means that this woman is an erva to you. If she's an erva to you, that doesn't change anymore. Once she's an erva, now, when she goes marries the other brother, Levi, Yehuda, any of the other brothers, makes no difference anymore because she's an erva. You go now and one of the other brothers dies and then you're faced with the same scenario again. You're faced with the scenario of marrying an erva plus the co-wives. So the erva is ptura, so are the co-wives ptura. So they say there's no necessity here for the language of Ein Li Ela Tzarata, Tzarat Tzarata Minayin. So that's actually an interesting question here. With the Gra eliminating it, he says it's clear from the Rabbeinu Tam, the Ramban, that you don't need the Girsa because they think it's a logical argument. It's clear from Rashi and from the Tosafot that that's not the case, that they have the Girsa in here, and they have the Girsa meaning that they think that you need it. It's not necessarily a logical extension, and that might be a difference in the way they view Tzarat Tzarata. You can view Tzarat Tzarata. What's the tour of Tzarat Tzarata? When the co-wife is exempted, the way the Ramban, the Rabbeinu Tam, the Rambam are learning it, it's because she's an erva. Now that she's an erva, she moves on to the next stage, she remains an erva, and that's why Tzarat Tzarata is ptura. On the other hand, if you learn like Rashi and Tosafot, you need a specific limud from the pasuk. It's not enough. The logic is not there. Just because she's Eshedach, Eshedach is not a real erva on the face of Yibum. It's not a real erva. She was exempted in this scenario because of the co-wife. That doesn't mean that she's an erva necessarily, because Eshedach is always a problem with Yibum.
So then when she moves on to the next brother, she's also Eshadach, but Eshadach is never a problem, so maybe Yibum should override it. That's why I need a pasuk to tell me, no, it doesn't work logically. There is an elimination through the limud in the pasuk. All right, now, Gemara continues. Yachol shani merabe af sheish ariyot chamurot me'elu. I would think you include even the six ariyot, which are more chamur than these. That is next Mishnah. The next Mishnah, the Masechta, says there are six ariyot that are much more stringent than the ariyot that we mentioned in our Mishnah. And the reason for those six ariyot are chamurot because even if they're married to someone else, tzarotehem are mutarot. They're tzarotehem are mutarot because they can never marry his brothers. Why can't they never marry his brothers? Because the restriction is such that the isur to him is the same isur to his brothers. For instance, if he has a brother through the father, Reuven and Yosef. Reuven and Yosef are brothers through the father. But Yosef is born to Rachel, and Reuven is born to Leah. Now, as far as Yosef's mother is concerned, Reuven can't marry Yosef's mother because it's Eshet Aviv. It's the wife of his father. So in that case, Erva is not an issue anymore because Reuven can never marry the Erva that applies to Yosef. So those are stringent, more stringent types of arayot, but you'll never have a scenario where they fall to Yibum. They can't fall to Yibum because none of the brothers can marry these arayot because these arayot are equally problematic for all the brothers through the father. And so because of that, they will never show up in a scenario like that. So I would think, Yochol Shemir Be'av Sheish Arayot Chamurot Me'ilu, Sheitz Arutayim Asurot, I would think that their co-wives are Asurot. Amart, Ma'achot Ishtom Yuchedet Shei Erva V'chayivin Azdon HaKaret V'shigir HaKatat V'efshar Li Naseh La'achim, and it's possible for her to marry the other brothers, Vasura Li'abam, and then she's restricted to Yabam. V'tzarat Asura, then Af, anything that's comparable to that, which is Af, Koshi Erva, V'chayivin Azdon HaKaret, so do any case where it's Erva, where if you did intentionally is chiyuv karet, and if you did unintentionally is a chatat, there's a possibility of marriage to the brothers or the father, and then when she's asur liyabam, then sarata asura, yatsu sheish arayot chamurot melo. Excluded from this is the six arayot, hold the ef shalina selachim. They can't marry any of the brothers here, sarutayim mutarot. Therefore their co-wives are mutarot. This is similar to what we said on Amud Aleph. This problem of co-wives to Erva is only a problem in Yibum. It's not a problem when there's an independent marriage that has nothing to do with Yibum. If a person's daughter is married to a man and he has other wives, those co-wives are not restricted to them. They have no relationship. Since they have no relationship, at least as brothers, when that man passes away, then the other co-wives are totally mutar. Just because they were co-wives to his daughter has no relevance. That's what we're saying over here too. The co-wives to these arayot are not eliminated or are not asurot because there's nothing to do with Yibum over here. Why does it have nothing to do with Yibum? Because none of them can marry any of the brothers. None of these arayot can be married to any of the brothers through the father. And therefore, they're not under this restriction of asurot. And then asurot, their co-wives are also asurot. So Gemara says, Azara Shamanu. Now you taught us that that's the warning. Onesh Minayin. How do I know there's a punishment here? Amar Kra'a. Kikol asher yaseh mikol ha-tovivot ha'ela, that's a summary pasuk. Over that, anybody does any of these arayot is chayav karet. So that tells you that there's a chayav karet associated with anyone you can't marry. So over here, if you cannot perform yibum with the woman because she's in erva, okay, that's why it's restricted, erva. The co-wives that you may not marry are also a problem of arayot because we learn from the pasuk here that there's an azara to marry a co-wife of an erva. Once there's an azara, then it's included in the pasha of arayot. Pasha of arayot says anybody who's an erva as a punishment of karet. So these co-wives now have a punishment of karet associated with them because you're not allowed to perform yibum with them. So if you're miyabim de erva or tzareta, not only is there a warning against doing that, there's also a chiyub karet. Because there's no mitzvah of yibum, no mitzvah of yibum, then the iser of karet still exists, both for the erva, for two reasons. The erva, because it's eshedach, but also because you have an independent relationship with this woman. For instance, if it's the daughter of the brother who has to marry here. So, for instance, Reuven and Shimon, where Reuven married Shimon's daughter, Shimon's restricted, if Reuven passes away without children, to his daughter because she's his daughter, and also because she's the wife of his brother. The co-wives that were there, he's restricted to because they were his brother's wives, and there's no mitzvah of Yibum, so therefore there will be a karet that exists over there. And that's what the Gemara is telling us over here, that the Isser karet will exist if there's no mitzvah of Yibum. So what we learned today is, number one, all arayot have the same din as long as the other brothers can marry those arayot. The other brothers can marry the Arayot. The problem is your relationship with this woman, not all the brothers' relationships with this woman. Then, if one of the other brothers marries that woman and it falls to you, you have a problem of Erva and co-wives of Ervot. Co-wives of Ervot, all of these are eliminated from Achotisha. We learned that din from Kodisha, which says Alea. Alea connects us from Alea here to Yavama, Yavo Alea. That tells you that even when there's a mitzvah of Yibom, Arayot precludes you from marrying the woman. How do I know that Sarah is also, the co-wives are excluded? Because the word, Litzror, tells me that also co-wives are excluded. So from that we learn out the din that we have in our Mishnah. The din in our Mishnah, which is, number one, if there is Erva, no Yibom. Co-wives of Erva, no Yibom. And if there's no Yibom, then there's a punishment of Karet that exists. And that's all learned out of this connection between Achot Isha and Yibom. And we extend it from Achot Isha to all the other Arayot that are similar to Achot Isha. Okay, I'm going to stop here. Six lines from the bottom of Gimel Amud Bet.